How's Carlsbad treating you?
Not too badly, actually. It's weather's quite pleasant. I'm sure you guys don't want to hear about that back in Toronto.
Oh, I think they should put a CFL franchise in Carlsbad. I'll do their PR for them.
Yeah, let's get an NHL team here too. That would certainly work. It's been an interesting couple of days, sort of quiet-ish. But it feels like there's a lot of stuff percolating under the surface. And one of the things that's a little bit intriguing, at least, I was curious to see how it was going to play out after last year's free agency. But, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, teams that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be on them are really making a case that, hey, we're going to get in on this. And that's, I think, if you're a player, if you're on the player side, you were curious to see, you're happy that teams are sort of getting back to the norm of being aggressive in free agency, at least when it comes to those two guys.
Yeah, it was interesting. I heard the scrum with Ross Atkins, and I think we're on the same page when it comes to what the Blue Jays are probably going to do this year. They're going to look for value, and I can hear, you know, Jays fans rolling their eyes out there, but tough. They're going to look for value. It's going to be a team built around a pretty young core. They're going to try to, if they can, milk something out of Troy Tulowitzki. If they can, at least solicit, you know, offers of anything even remotely resembling value for Russ Martin and maybe Kenrys Morales, although, quite frankly, I'd kind of like to have Kenrys Morales around here. But the rest of it's going to be, you know, as our friend Ben Nicholson-Smith wrote, you may be hearing a lot of rumors about the Lance Lynns of the world, the Trevor Cahills of the world. But what I found interesting, you know, you look at this team and you ask yourself, all right, if Ross Atkins, if the Blue Jays were to decide to make a bold move, what do they have that could bring them something in return? And we've talked about this. So not trading Justin Smoke. Kevin Pillar doesn't bring you anything bold in return. It comes down to, by my guess, Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, maybe Ken Giles. The problem is Stroman and Sanchez, you know, coming off seasons where health issues were a great concern. So when I heard Ross Atkins say that Marcus Stroman is of more value to us right now than any other team, I just took that to mean that Marcus Stroman's trade value is not really good right now. I think that's what Ross Atkins meant by that.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I think that could change over the course of the offseason as some of the pitching names start coming off the board. And, you know, teams that are looking to add a starter and who don't end up with Patrick Corbin or Dallas Keuchel, or even perhaps Yusei Kikuchi, the Japanese pitcher who's coming over, is a bit intriguing. You know, they're going to start looking for options on the trade market and guys with a couple years of control. With the costs relatively contained for what starters are going for, you know, they're tough to find. And, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you have to be careful when you're trading away Stroman and Sanchez, because if you don't get a decent return for them, I mean, you could very well spend the next 3-4 years trying to recreate them, and that's super difficult as well. But I think a lot of what happens for the Blue Jays, at least on the pitching side this offseason, depends on, one, what the trade market offers up for them in terms of acquiring pitchers, and what the trade market offers for them in terms of opportunities to get value back for those two pitchers.
Shai, you know, when you look at where this team is right now, you know, when you pointed out the payroll is going to be down this year, but, you know, I read someplace, somebody said they're slashing payroll. Well, no, this is what happens when you have a young team. Your payroll is going to be lower because young guys are going to be paid less. That's the way the system works. I mean, I'm sure Ross and Mark, and I'm sure the people here probably they're not going to be upset. But the idea that there's some sort of big philosophical decision to slice cost here, this is more a product, I think, of the philosophy, of the baseball philosophy about how they're going to go about building a team. Do you have any idea? And again, this is, I understand it's purely hypothetical here. But could they, if something really intriguing falls into their lap, you know, I mean, we're getting to an era now where guys are being made available at a younger age, either through free agency or in some cases through trades. Do they have the financial wherewithal?
and I'm just going to throw a name out there. Do they have the financial wherewithal to do something like go after a James Paxton should the Mariners really blow this thing up? Are they positioned to make that type of move?
I'd certainly think so, but you know, in terms of the prospect capital, I'm not sure that that one lines up for them. Mm-hmm. As opposed to somebody else. But I certainly know exactly what you mean. And I think as an example, and again, the name isn't the exact comp, but the situation is where to look at, is the way the Phillies got Jake Arrieta last offseason. You know, he was hanging around free agency. His market didn't really develop. You know, the Phillies had some money and an opportunity left, and they thought, hey, this is a guy who can help us now and help us into the future. That's the type of scenario in which the Blue Jays, I think, end up getting, you know, a more significant type of player this offseason. And they do have the money. I don't think they're not scorching the earth. It's not like they're dropping to $100 million. You know, I don't know this for a fact, but my sense is that they'll probably end up in the 120, 130 range.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, with the guaranteed money that they have on the books, as well as some rough arbitration projections for the players they have, they've got about $95, $96 million guaranteed to 14 players. So, you know, you factor in that a lot of the rest of their roster is going to be young and cheap. You know, they've got some money to play with this offseason. And I can see the Blue Jays really waiting things out, taking things slow. And if an opportunity develops on the trade market, pouncing for that. But then waiting to see what happens in, you know, late December, January in the free agent market before acting there.
Shai, you know, we hear that, you know, our friend Jeff Passan reporting that the Mariners are, you know, are listening to offers on veterans. You know, I guess you can make the leap from there to say the Mariners are looking at blowing it up, but I think that might be a little drastic. We know that the Cleveland Indians are looking at and listening to offers on veterans. From a distance, it looks to me, and you know, maybe we'll see a team like the White Sox step up and push their ETA up by a year or 2 years because of what's going on. But if I'm Rob Manfred, I'm looking at this right now, and Shai, I'm kind of getting the impression that there are a bunch of teams that are sort of quietly suggesting to me that they don't think they're going to win the way they're currently constituted. And I don't know if you're Rob Manfred. If you want a league where you've got, you know, four teams going for it and everybody else kind of in various stages of a rebuild, man, that's hard to sell. That's because baseball fans are smart, and baseball fans will figure that out right away.
Yeah, you're 100% right about that. And I think what we've really seen in the past few years, and it was about, you know, maybe three or four seasons ago where the trend was that way in the National League, where you had four or five teams going for it and everyone else was sort of in tank rebuild mode. And then that's transitioned now to the American League, where you're going to have about four or five super teams and other clubs that are stepping back into various stages of rebuild. I do think the White Sox are a team to watch. You know, their general manager, Rick Hahn, is not shying away from the suggestions that they're going to be in on Machado and in on Harper one bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super intriguing that they're ready to accelerate their rebuild. You know, the Reds are making some noises about spending some money on starting pitching. You know, I think that there's some teams, you know, the Phillies are determined to not only take the seat at the big boys table, they're determined to stay there. And the expectation is that, you know, they're going to try to land at least one of Harper or Machado, if not both. So I think you have a lot more teams that are being aggressive. It's just not necessarily the teams you'd expect, and it's more spread out. And I think that the American League is probably a couple years away from being along where some of those National League teams are, just because teams are a little bit earlier in their rebuild process.
Right. So essentially what you're suggesting is, yeah, there will be teams that will be rebuilding, but there's almost like an equal and opposite reaction, right? If three teams decide they're going to go in a full-scale rebuild, there could be three other teams looking at that and going, hey, now's our chance. I mean, if I'm Chicago and if I'm the White Sox and I'm in a division where Kansas City's rebuilding, Minnesota's kind of, you know, one step forward, two steps back, Detroit could be a decade away from being any good, and now the Cleveland Indians, who ruled the division, are saying, hey, we're going to retrench a bit. Maybe what happens is, you know, we get three surprise teams rebuilding, three or four teams we didn't expect to be there suddenly saying, hell yeah, if you're going to do that, you know, we'll have at it. We'll step up and try to take your place.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sort of where things are. And again, you know, that's where the National League was not that long ago, where, you know, the Phillies were terrible and, you know, the Brewers were terrible and the Reds were terrible and the Pirates were terrible. And there's been some shifting there. And, you know, the Phillies are stepping up. You know, the Marlins have taken a couple steps back. But, you know, they're kind of trying to get to that point where they can start spending some money again. The Mets, they don't want to rebuild. They sound like they could spend a little bit too. So there is this process of some teams stepping forward, some teams stepping back. The way that the game has become, though, is that teams are much more quickly making the decision that if they're not going to be within the top tier, then they're better off stepping back in a significant fashion. And that's the trend that if you're Rob Manfred, you're a little bit worried about.
Shai, do we have any sense yet as to how far along in the process Charlie Montoyo is when it comes to putting together his staff? And I'm going to ask you, because I read an article, and I think it was a conference call you were on, where Charlie Montoyo seemed to be pushing for Neil Allen. Maybe I misread it. I apologize if I did. But, I mean, they do have Pete Walker. I presume he's coming back as a pitching coach. Can you maybe just fill us in a little bit on where that stands right now, where the coaching staff stands?
Yeah, you're certainly right. He did say that he was pushing for Neil Allen, who was his longtime pitching coach at AAA Durham and most recently was the pitching coach for the Minnesota Twins. But all indications are right now that Pete Walker's coming back and, you know, it seems that there's a push to have Dane Johnson return as bullpen coach, and where Neil Allen would fit under that scenario is a little bit less clear. But my understanding is that Charlie Montoyo is engaged in interviews for hitting coach right now. That's going to come down the line. You know, I think there's some uncertainty about what happens with DeMarlo Hale. Mm-hmm. He's been talking to some other clubs and exploring some other opportunities, but he could also return to the Blue Jays as well. But beyond that, they're expecting more or less the coaching staff to come back. You know, Pete Walker, obviously the big one, Dane Johnson, bullpen coach, third base coach Lou Rivera should be back as well. So there'll be some continuity, but there's still some uncertainty in terms of how it all shapes up.
Shai, it was a year ago today that Roy Halladay passed away in that plane accident. Just some thoughts on kind of the year since then. And, you know, we saw this organization and the Phillies, really heartfelt tributes to Roy Halladay. It's funny because I was thinking about this, and Travis McKenzie mentioned to me that it's a year ago today. You know, I think back at that time and looking at the Jays starting pitching, and every time I looked at Aaron Sanchez, I was thinking, man, this guy could be like the next Roy Halladay. He's kind of got the build. There's some similarities between the two of them in terms of demeanor. You know, of course, we've seen what happened to Aaron. We've seen what has happened to Marcus Stroman. And it just reinforced in my mind, Shai, just what a physical beast Roy Halladay was as a pitcher. Like, just how he was a metronome. Like, he was, you know, can you imagine a team having a Roy Halladay in his prime in the postseason right now? You know, I was thinking about that a lot today.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's a year. And the thing that, you know, I keep striking is that, you know, he's going to be on the Hall of Fame ballot this year for the first time.
Yep.
And how sad it is that he's not going to be around to see it and to be feted in, you know, to really see how much the baseball world appreciated him. But you're absolutely right in terms of how what a beast he was. And, you know, the one thing that I think often gets overlooked, or he doesn't necessarily get enough credit for, is how much he pitched in the American League East meat grinder against the Red Sox and the Yankees, and he still did what he did, and he still built up the numbers that he had. You know, a lot of guys would have shied away from that or wouldn't have been able to succeed under those circumstances. But not only did he, you know, have to face those teams in his division, the Blue Jays would regularly alter their pitching schedule, you know, sometimes even start him on short rest to ensure that he got the Red Sox and the Yankees in, often in back-to-back outings. And he still was the dominant pitcher of his era against those teams. It's just, he was really a breed apart. He's an obvious Hall of Famer. If he doesn't get elected on his first ballot, then shame on the BBWAA, because, you know, he's the best pitcher of his era. And, you know, one of the greatest that we've seen here. And, you know, I think the tragedy still sits with all of us.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Well said. Before we let you run, I did want to ask you about Jay Happ. No surprise, we know the Jays have spoken to him. We also know the Yankees are interested in re-signing him. I've got to think there's some other teams interested as well. And I know we don't know yet how it's going to play out, but I will ask you this. The fact that the Yankees have moved to sign Brett Gardner, they've moved to re-sign CC Sabathia. Do you get the sense that the Yankees, that if they are going to re-sign Jay Happ, they will move very quickly on Jay Happ?
I think they'll try, but I think if you're Jay, and just knowing Jay, you know, this is a guy who's pretty methodical about understanding what the opportunities are, but he's also someone who really values his comfort and, you know, the larger situation for his family. And I think that's the one thing the Jays can offer him that the other teams can't, is a very good family situation. But the reality is the opportunities elsewhere are going to be very plentiful for him. I can't see a realistic scenario where he returns. He's really, if you don't want to spend big on Patrick Corbin or Dallas Keuchel, you know, Jay Happ's really your guy in free agency. And, you know, as far as what he brings to the table, I think everyone around the majors understands that he's the ultimate definition of a professional. And, he's exactly what you want on a contending club.
Shai, are you an MVP voter?
Not this year.
Okay. I was just wondering a quick, because someone fired me an email about this. You surprised J.D. Martinez isn't on the final ballot?
I was, but then, you know, you look at it, and it was funny. I remember talking to somebody. Somebody pulled me aside and said, who's your MVP this year, Betts or Martinez? I said, you know, it's a tough one, but based on defense, I'd pick Betts. And person just shook his head at me. He's like, you're wrong. It's J.D. Martinez, and just kind of stormed off. and I think that J.D. Martinez is getting penalized for not playing defense. And look, Mookie Betts had a spectacular season, but the impression that I got is that, you know, the guy who really changed things in Boston was J.D. Martinez. Mm-hmm. And that without him in the middle of that lineup, a lot of the production that they had, the season they had, probably doesn't happen in the same way. And I think that gets overlooked because Mookie Betts is such a dynamic player on both sides of the ball and does so many other different things. It's kind of funny that, you know, Mookie Betts may very well have been the best player in the American League, but J.D. Martinez might have been the most important. But as a result of that, he ends up on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and of course, J.D. Martinez, learned the lesson this year that every American League, every great American League player learns. It doesn't matter how good your season is. Mike Trout's going to occupy he's going to get one of the final three places on the MVP vote. It just is. There's two places open. Let's just put it that way. There's two places open in the American League. There are the two non-Mike Trout slots, and leave it at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually curious to see how the final vote breaks down and see how much split there was in terms of points for Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez. And I think the opportunity for other guys, for Ramirez and for Trout, is that J.D. Martinez takes away too many points from Betts and opens up a path for one of the other two to win the award.
Yeah, and we should remind people that the votes are in. They're sent in the final day of before the start of the postseason. So we know we don't know who the winner is, but the winner has already been chosen. So just because you've made it in the final three doesn't necessarily mean that your vote total is going to increase in the next week. It doesn't work out that way. Shai, thanks for doing this, man. Enjoy Carlsbad. Say hi to Arash and travel safely.
Thanks, dude.